Hey yo!
Here at Great Go Crazy, Dr. Neville Sutherland, Patrick O'Dowd will bring you the bullshit internet wrestling news reports and the trajectory of Kevin Owens. All that and more on this edition of the Buffalo Wrestling.
With Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd, the wrestling realist. And we are talking about a topic that the entire wrestling world has been talking about for a while, but obviously business picked up, as they say, with this topic. And that is, of course, the topic of your new WWE champion, Jinder Mahal. Now, Patrick O'Dowd, who did I pick last week for the main event of Backlash? Who did I say was going to win?
You picked Jinder Mahal.
I did, and even with the percentages, I think I went 75% is what I went versus your 40%. Yeah, it was. On the there's a pick'em group on the Facebook, and I did a pick'em and was perfect for Backlash, actually, believe it or not. So
nice. Well done.
Rarely do I do the perfect. Yeah, because I went with Kevin Owens.
Yeah. You know, you're entering into my territory now.
I know. It was a good week for me with that one anyway. So, and I'm super excited, but we don't do the card rundowns that other shows do. There's plenty of great shows out there for you to listen to and some bad ones too, that'll run down a card match by match by match. And you can fall asleep to it and it's good because it cures insomnia. But, and some people do it very well. Don't get me wrong. There are some good ones out there, like my good buddy Dave and the Attitude of Aggression podcast. He will be breaking down later this week, I'm sure. But, I want to talk about, of course, the big happening, and that was Jinder Mahal winning the WWE Championship. Many people, Patrick O'Dowd, based on the responses, did not think it was going to happen. And maybe we'll start there. You were, of course, vacationing at the time, but what did you think of the reaction to Jinder becoming a world champion?
Are you talking about the fan reaction? Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, sorry. Yeah, the fan reaction, the IWC explosion, if you will.
You know, I think it's unfair. I think it's a little hypocritical. I think that it's hilarious that I saw so many people, like, even if they were like, I'm okay with Jinder winning the title, They had to be like, I just wish they would have waited 3 to 6 more months before they put the strap on him, as if they don't know how to do math. Because even if you're nice and you go 3 months, that means Orton's carrying the belt in the SummerSlam, and then Jinder Mahal is going to have a run to what, Survivor Series? And so you know, even that like hedge betting sort of thing was silly to me. You know, people being outraged over the fact that he won and saying, well, he was a jobber 2 months ago, whatever. Like, in this era of wrestling, you know, when you're reinventing a character, which is what they did.
Oh, yeah.
What's the big problem? And what's the real problem with this, you know, this guy having this legit shot and taking the ball and running with it, and the WWE kind of going out of their way to support him with this run. Like, he didn't lose the title tonight, or I'm sorry, he didn't lose the title on SmackDown. he got to celebrate. Yeah, damn, not a live show. But it is one of those things. It's, you know, they're going to give it the run. This is the time of year when you throw something against the wall and see if it sticks. And as I like to say, for those people who have lost their minds over how just this is just this terrible decision and everything's going downhill and this is just how can we even do this and how is this even believable, take a step back and as I like to say, just let it marinate a little bit. Like let's actually see what happens here. Because I wasn't against Jinder Mahal winning the belt. I just didn't think he was going to win it at this pay-per-view.
Right.
You know, I thought with, you know, especially with a Money in the Bank pay-per-view being the next one, he could have been Mr. Money in the Bank, and I would have been just fine and okay with it. And I'm sure that's how a lot of people are screaming at their computers as to how the WWE should have done it. I don't know that that would have been the best way. It would have been okay. But, you know, people need to calm down. People need to calm down.
So take us back to Sunday. What was your reaction to gender winning? Because your text, to pull back the curtain, your text message to me was just kind of, you know, welp. And so what was behind that? What was your reaction to gender winning the belt?
That was just me acknowledging that you got it right. was really what that was supposed to be. That wasn't really like I'm not mad about it. It's kind of like I said last week. It was like I'm fine with it. It's good for him. I'm like good for Jinder Mahal doesn't, you know, kind of get Jinder Mahal doesn't get me super excited necessarily. I like where they're going with this character. I'm not full bore into yes, you know, this guy must be champion. And I think this is a great move or anything like that. I think that, you know, there's still plenty of time for them to build him however they see fit in terms of this title reign. And it may be a 2 month long title reign. I'm thinking maybe, I'm actually thinking maybe he gets through SummerSlam, maybe. I'd love to see him hold it till Survivor Series, like get it to November, you know, and just see what he can do with it. I think that'd be a fun little run. That might be overestimating how long he holds that belt, but you know, I think it's a good story. I think it's good. I think it's good for him. I think it shows that, you know, nobody's ever completely dead in the water when it comes to the WWE, and when they want to, they can basically make anyone champion.
Yeah, you know, the whole time frame that you're talking about, I don't know. There's a feeling that I can't shake, and it might be right, it might be wrong. Who knows? But I've had it since he won. I did not have it before he won, but I've had it since he won, and that's the feeling that this might be a thing. Like, this might actually be a real long-term thing with Jinder Mahal. Like, I don't know that this is experiment, throw spaghetti against the wall, see if it sticks, any of that stuff. I mean, they gave him the full-blown celebration. And there's some telltale things if you go back and you watch, which most of us can, thanks to the WWE Network. If you go back and watch Backlash, from the moment the three count was over, I don't think we saw Randy Orton again on camera. It was all about Jinder. It was every, you know, 2-3 minutes of isolation shots on Jinder. And it wasn't – the story wasn't Orton losing and being in shock. The story was Jinder winning. And that, to me, says a lot about where they're going in the future. And then, of course, you had the celebration today with Jinder and using the extra talent and everything else. And I just can't shake the feeling that, like, Jinder might be around for a while. As long as he can carry the ball. I'm not saying he's going to be a long-term world champion, but he might be a main event player for a decent amount of time with this company. And that's, I mean, that's, again, you know, from zero to hero. I mean, he was a jobber a few months ago. The big difference between us saying he was a jobber a few months ago and everybody on Facebook saying that he was a jobber a few months ago is that we're not mad about it, and they are. They are super mad.
I think you hit on one really big point, though, in terms of his longevity before you go and finish that up. It really is about does he carry the ball? And I guess more importantly, does the WWE see what he's doing and see his performance as actually carrying the ball? You know what I mean? Because they just as quickly as they can give it to you, they can take it away. Asked off.
Right. And the injury, you know, he could get – if he becomes an injury problem, that plays a factor too. So there's a lot of question marks out there to see what happens. I'm interested to see the ratings for SmackDown because right now SmackDown was coming off a low last week and Raw just keeps hitting the lows because it's summertime. I mean, that's – and everybody wants to blame whatever. It's summertime. These things are going to happen. People vacation. People, you know, time shift. And once you time shift more than 3 days, it doesn't count for the ratings. And so – you know, there's differences in the way people watch TV now. We should some people don't want to accept it, but we should know that now and understand that it's reality. I'll be interested to see the ratings for Jinder Mahal's first SmackDown as champion. That's because he's sitting at the big boy table now, and he's carrying the brand, you know, and he's a champion. For anybody who thinks this was a quick, you know, snap of the fingers decision, he's already got the custom side plates, and you have to order those, and they have to show up, and they have to be fabricated, unless they make them for everybody on the roster just in case, which you never know with the WWE, but I have a feeling they don't. This was definitely in the works and was a plan for a little bit. I know in a recent interview, Jinder said he found out on Sunday, and that wouldn't surprise me if it were true, because it's kind of how they do business sometimes. But I love the interviews with Jinder Mahal where he talks about, you know, the conversations with Vince McMahon that he recently had, and how during his first run, he avoided Vince McMahon, didn't want to see him, almost as if he was afraid of him. He didn't say he was afraid of him, but that's what it kind of sounds like. And now he's talking to Vince, and he talked about how Vince rewrote his promo when he won the title shot, and how he asked Vince, hey, you know, on every house show, can I cut a promo? And you know, Jinder, it just, he's into it, and it's not, it doesn't sound like he's taking it for granted. Obviously we're reading and seeing what people want us to read and see, but to me, it seems like there's something here with Jinder. I was all for it before. I'm all for it now, and I'm 100% in on Jinder. So how far, I mean, is this, you know, obviously we can't predict injuries and we can't predict, you know, management decisions and things like that. But are we looking at, let's say, JBL, or are we looking at Jack Swagger?
Man, that's tough.
And you can't go in the middle. You can't go Sheamus.
I can't go Sheamus. See, here's the thing that's kind of looming in the background is the heirs apparent that can line up to take this guy on, not counting Orton, who could very well make him a Jack Swagger when Money in the Bank comes rolling around. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that the way you see it, I'm going to go with what I hope in this regard, because I do think, honestly, I'd wish you would let me make a Sheamus and split the difference. And I'm going to say it's going to be more. I'm going to say it's going to be more JBL and less Jack Swagger. And I'm going to say that because when you look at the recent spate of champions that we've had in the WWE, when it's been like these first time champions, they've had the belt for a decent amount of time. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to be an Owens or an AJ, but Owens and AJ held their respective belts for quite a bit of, you know, quite a serious chunk of time. And then they immediately put another belt right back on Kevin Owens, because that's how they feel about Owens. And that, you know, this guy must be a champion. That's my feeling in terms of, I'm serious. Like, I think that they absolutely, like, this guy must carry a belt.
He showed up with a belt on his shoulder. I mean,
exactly.
You know,
and so
he
like
walked in over the belt and
over the shoulder, fat guy with a belt. That's what they're going to do. But no, when it comes to Jinder, I think that I want to see him make it to Survivor Series. That would, to me, be great in terms of the type of run that he could have and he could get. What makes me nervous is that you've got people like AJ Styles. Nakamura's time is going to come. We talked about how long Nakamura may be with the WWE. And so, you know, how long is it before they put a strap on him? Do you give it back to Orton? You know, Corbin's not there yet. That's just crazy talk. And I forget who the other was. Is it Ziggler that's in the – I can't remember who the last person was. Is in Money in the Bank. I already forgot.
Ziggler's in there.
Is Ziggler. So I don't think it's – you know, I don't think you got to worry about Ziggler or Corbin. But you've got three guys very legitimately who you easily can shoot the bell back onto. And one guy that I want to see that I think they'll try and get as white hot as possible. So they may hold off a little bit before putting the strap on him. To me, while they're there, outside of Nakamura, I don't know who really needs to have a belt put on them right now. So it can wait.
Right. It's funny. I just read a house show report from Monday night's house show for SmackDown, and the opening match was Ziggler and Nakamura, and it was described as disappointing. So it just and you don't hear that with either of those people.
Well, was it a house show match?
Yeah, it was. I'm sure it was.
Well, I mean, that's why. I mean, You've been to house shows. I've been to house shows. There's a couple of different things that happen on house shows. And so, you know, when it's guys trying to figure, you know, figure things out for whatever it is they're doing down the road, or just, you know, kind of getting their work in, hey, we're not going to do every big spot.
Right.
We're just not.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We brought up the house shows. Someone took the time and probably through the cagematch.net database or something like that and basically posted Jinder Mahal's record since he came back. And it was like 7-91. It was his record. So something crazy like that. And okay. But they put in there. What's that?
I said, okay.
But they even put in there, including house shows. And that to me is just unfair. Like that's, you're trying to manipulate the data to support your argument instead of seeing what the data actually tells you. Because the thing that typically happens on house shows, unless there's a storyline reason to do otherwise, faces normally win on house shows. It's been that way for a decade plus because it's about making the fans happy. House show, faces over. Like that's something that's commonly been done. It's the same on the independents. When they do like a school show or a fundraiser, it's typically faces over in every match because it's not about storytelling at that point. It's just about entertaining the crowd, and you want the crowd to be happy. Now, if they're pushing Rusev as a monster heel, he's going to go over somebody at the house show because that's what they're trying to do. But even when Roman Reigns had the United States Championship and Kevin Owens was a Universal Champion, they were – Roman Reigns was defending the U.S. title and beating Owens. So it was, you know, because it faces over and it's Roman Reigns. And it might have been the Intercontinental Championship. I don't know which one it was. But regardless,
it wasn't matter.
They were doing it in a way. And the same thing happened with Rollins and Cena. Cena was beating Rollins as the U.S. champion when Rollins was the world champion on the house shows because that's what it's about, faces over. So to hold house show losses against Jinder when you're trying to make an argument – isn't fair at all, 100%. But that's the vitriol that people have about Jinder right now. There's just so much arguing and people just, you know, the jobber thing. Some people have gone, you know, gone racist with it, which is stupid and is not even something that should be discussed. But and I think the biggest problem, and it goes back to the age-old argument that you and I have on this program, not with each other but with everyone else, it's the playlist. Mm-hmm. It's just not on my playlist. And the quote has been used, and I've used it, and many others have used it. We want change. Change happens. Wait, that's not the change we wanted. We get different change. It happens again.
Yeah.
No. We want this specific change. You don't want change. You just want your idea to happen.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's one of the other things. It's been kind of fun to read the arguments back and forth between the two. I hate to use the word faction, but there's this interesting back and forth I've seen on Twitter and Facebook and all of that, Insta chat, if you will, that is like, you know, this idea of we want change, but not, you know, not this change. Or the other one, and this is the other one, everybody thinks they're a better booker than the company that has made itself the monstrosity global wrestling entity that is the end and pinnacle of professional wrestling. And you think as a fan that you know what everybody wants and that you're going to bring it back from where it's not fallen from. Like that's weird to me. And that people won't hear that people seem to think that they just know. You don't know. And you know, just like a lot of things, when people present information that shows that your argument is false, you still will scream at us about how important it is that Sami Zayn, you know, get a bigger push. I love Sami Zayn. He's fine where he is. And there's a reason he's where he is.
It's you know, when I wrote that argument about Zack Ryder, people ask him why Zack Ryder doesn't get a bigger push. And I give you all the reasons why Zack Ryder doesn't get a bigger push. And then he wins the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania. So it's
– which is about as high as Zack Ryder can go.
Yeah, he's
honestly,
never going to be
like, –
you know, and it just pisses people off. Zack Ryder's never going to achieve Jinder Mahal's success.
Yeah.
And And first of all, if you said that 6 months ago, I would have laughed at you. But
sure.
It's true.
And I don't, you know, and it's interesting because I would like to know, like, I would love to have been a fly on the wall when they flipped the switch on Jinder Mahal. Like, when they were like, you know what? What if we did this? You know, and what level was Jinder involved in the direction of that character and that shift and that change? What happened to make that so? Because somebody clearly saw something in him and what he was doing. You know, and maybe it was just that he was busting his ass and working hard. But it's generally more than that. Like, somebody had to see something that then made them be like, we could do so much more with this guy. In a way that they don't, you know, that they don't always see it with some other guys. Or they've just got, you know, people who are who they are and they're happy where they are. Like an R-Truth. Or a Dolph Ziggler. Like, I think Dolph Ziggler is fine with where he is in his career and on the card.
I agree 100%. I will go back. The whole, you know, somebody saw something and decided they could do more with Ziggler. I still maintain that was WrestleMania. When he was the guy who put over Rob Gronkowski, and he did it in the manner in which he did, where he went all in on that thing, and he made Gronk look like $1 million while making himself look like $1 million. I think they were like, huh, really? Okay, we have something here. And that's why they push it. I know everyone loves making the India argument because they're trying to move into India. And if that's the case, then Nakamura would have been world champion already because of when they were trying to move into Japan. And so now I'm not saying that's not something to leverage. They'd be stupid not to. But they sent the New Day to India to do marketing and appearances and everything while pushing Jinder here. And, of course, everything. They know what's going to happen with everything.
Yeah, they make that. I mean, that argument got made back when the Great Khali was around too, though.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Anytime, yeah, it's kind of, and this is what's funny. You brought up racism, and I'm gonna go there. It's a little bit of a racist way to look at this. It's like, oh, they're just using this to get a market. Like, that's bullshit. I'm sorry. Like, that's bullshit. Like, sure, that doesn't hurt, but that's not the only reason that they do. You know, that they give somebody the strap, like. The India market, you think that's going to make or break the WWE or is going to do something different? No, not at all.
Right.
And
it's 1.3 billion people. I mean, it's a hell of a lot of people, but there's lots of different ways to break into a market. And
just
not
show
only that,
up.
Yeah, exactly. You know who else is going nuts? Calgary. Calgary is going nuts right now because that's where Jinder is from, you know, and Vancouver is where the Singh brothers are from. And I did love the video online of the Indian or the Hindi commentary where they were just going absolutely nuts, and good for them. They deserve a moment like that. Another interesting fact right now, every single champion on the SmackDown brand is like a non-white person. So I don't know that's ever happened.
Where was what about the time? Was it like New Day, Sasha? I thought there was something, or not Sasha.
But it wasn't everybody. It was New Day, Sasha, and Rich Swann, and they did the Black Excellence.
Right. No,
and everyone went nuts
to
racism then too, because we love racism in this country. We love race. We love race. Everything. People are so mad just hearing us talk about this right now.
Yeah, it's laughable because the argument, it's funny because what tends to happen with these sorts of things is you point this out, whether it's, you know, our current champions or a tweet or anything like that, and people want to be like, they want to play both sides of it. They want to be like, well, they don't need to bring their race into it, but like, why can't, you know, white people be like, blah, 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 blah. It's like, you don't get it. You just don't get it. It's like, You don't understand because you've never been in that position before.
Yeah,
and,
no,
and
exactly.
It's really,
right.
Yeah, it's really so.
And it's predominantly white people making this really stupid argument, which is just so backwards. They don't even see it.
No, yeah. But
I made a post on Facebook. I don't know if you saw it or not because I know you're not always living there. And it basically says everyone thinks they can run the WWE better than the WWE can. And they're all wrong. And the funny thing is, and some people had the call to put on there, I definitely could run the WWE better. And I just replied, no, you couldn't. But the funny part is, when I look at the people who liked the post, and didn't say anything, just liked it and went on with their day. It's all people inside the wrestling business. And if you look at people who are fully behind what's happened in this push for Jinder Mahal, it's all people who are inside the wrestling business. And while some of them are simply just happy for a peer, someone that they may have spent some time with, they also see it. Like, they see why the WWE is doing what they're doing, because they understand how the WWE thinks. And no offense, but the common fan, maybe I shouldn't use common, maybe the average fan, doesn't get it. It's not even the average fan. Okay, because the average fan is the casual fan. They don't care about all this arguing, fuss, and fighting. But the average IWC fan simply does not get it whatsoever. To the point where they will look for every little thing. People I respect, people whose opinion I enjoy, tuning out, quote unquote, tuning out because of Jinder Mahal. And that's just insane. Yeah.
I mean, you call it insane. I call it dumb. Like, because I don't know. I mean, this is the same area. Like, you at this point, if this is your breaking point, I'm sorry, if this is what broke you from watching the WWE, the fact that Jinder Mahal is the champion, like, really? Like, with all the stuff that we've gone through over the years as fans, like, people that are my age that can remember things like Katie Vick, can remember, you know, Big Show's dead dad being dragged away.
Right.
But Jinder Mahal is it? Like, that's too much? Like, come off of it. Like, you just stop.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, people are just – and it's just because it's not their guy. If we were sitting here talking about Sami Zayn right now, no one would have a problem. They would. They'd be going nuts. They'd think it was the greatest thing ever. And you know what? Maybe it would be.
Wouldn't get it. Those other fans would be like, this makes no sense.
The ones that pay the bills. Yeah, they would be like, this makes no sense whatsoever. So let's wrap it up in a fun way. WrestleMania 33. Okay, New Orleans, everybody's going to be going nuts. That is, or 34. 34 is New Orleans, right? Am I wrong? I think 34. So WrestleMania 34, New Orleans. What's Jinder doing?
Well, he's not. I don't think he's wrestling for a title. I could see, depending on where they take his character, I see him in a middle of the show. Sort of match wrestling kind of like the John Cena match, where the John Cena match is now in his career. Like, it's that he's wrestling somebody who's established, who is known and popular and is a face, and maybe wins.
Yeah. It's funny because the John Cena match, and people don't realize the John Cena match has been a thing since WrestleMania 30, like the middle of the card John Cena match. You know, this year it was the mixed tag because of the engagement, but what's really funny, and I shouldn't do this because I have a cop out, but it's really not. That's exactly what I was thinking. The John Cena match in the middle of WrestleMania,
the John Cena match.
Or
if
they go like, you know, Intercontinental Championship ladder match or United States, whatever, I could see him being plugged in there as well. I still think, go ahead.
Well, the other argument that I can make, and depending on how big they want to do it, maybe he's wrestling like a Shane McMahon match. Here's the thing: is I don't like that Shane gets in the ring. He still gets in the ring like every damn year, and it's an important match. Like, I think whatever he does is going to be relatively important.
Yeah, I agree with you because I think they're fully behind Jinder. So you've hinted at it a little bit. But where's the end point for this reign? Just this reign, regardless of this, if there's reigns 2, 3, 4, and Sheamus has had 4, so I kind of set that as a standard sometimes. Where does this reign end?
Oh, gosh. So let's see. This started in May. I'm assuming SummerSlam is in August.
Yes.
Right. So I said I wanted him to go to Survivor Series, but I don't think he makes it to Survivor Series. And I don't know what the pay-per-view is at. I think he survives SummerSlam, but doesn't make it to Survivor Series. And I don't know what the SmackDown pay-per-view is in there. So I'm looking at around a 4 to 5 month reign is what I'm saying.
Gotcha. Okay. 4 to 5 month reign. I am I'll go crazy because I think they're really behind this Jinder thing. I'll go Royal Rumble. I'll give him to the Royal Rumble. Yeah. He'll lose it on the undercard of the Royal Rumble because they want to do something else for WrestleMania. And here's the funny part. Some people will complain about that. That they just took the belt off Jinder because they wanted, you know, Randy Orton to have the WrestleMania title match or whatever. Like, people will turn. They will turn because this is what we do. This is exactly what's going to happen. Just like, you know, I'm telling you, had Daniel Bryan not been hurt and had to forfeit that world title, people would have turned. They were already booing his sob act that he was starting to do when he came out on Raw. So it would have happened. And I know people think I'm crazy and they're going to tell me I'm stupid and whatever. Go ahead. I don't care. But it would have turned around that way. Bonus prediction that I'll give you and give everybody else out there. I still think it's going to be Sami Zayn, but I'm not going to go too far. But whoever cashes in Money in the Bank against Jinder will lose. Is my thought.
I mean, I think if it's Sami Zayn, he definitely loses.
Yeah, because I think it's going to be the typical. I mean, we're getting the heel run as a champion. Like people are going to be turn this complaining is going to turn into Jinder losing by count out, winning because of the Singh brothers. Like they're going to start complaining that they're doing Jinder wrong because he always has to cheat to win his matches.
Well, and that's always. It's funny the way people have forgotten that bad guys aren't supposed to win clean. Or aren't supposed to win honest. I sometimes when I look back on the Attitude Era and the early 2000s, sometimes I really resent the expectations that got created there because they in some ways have handcuffed people's way of looking at storytelling.
We can thank people like Triple H for that too, who were going over clean in the title matches.
Sure.
So and even WCW. I mean, with the NWO, they didn't always cheat to win. You're right. The era, but this is we've gone back a little bit in a good way, and so I think we're in for a whole lot of cheating from Jinder Mahal, and that's exactly the way it should be, 100%. If you want a heel champion that wins matches relatively clean, go watch NXT. Because you've got it right there with Bobby Roode. But it's for Jinder, this is the story they're going to tell. And I, for one, am excited about it. So very happy with Jinder Mahal and his upcoming run as the WWE champion.
Agencies around the world are receiving breaking news that CM Punk has sneezed while at a hockey game, which clearly indicates he has signed a new contract with WWE. He then confirmed his return by tweeting something completely unrelated to wrestling. Backstage sources believe he'll come back at SummerSlam, but plans may change.
Patrick, this is Leigh Emery, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick Adele.
Bullshit.
The wrestling realist Patrick O'Dowd's bullshit Eric report of the week.
It is time for the wrestling realist Patrick O'Dowd to bring the bullshit. The bullshit internet wrestling report of the week. I know it's been a while.
I know. I gotta like crack the knuckles here. Like
get ready for it.
Some of the old standbys. Because you know when you haven't done something in a while, you just gotta kind of get back into what's comfortable. And so let's start with some of our comfort zones. What do you think? Like our good friend.
I believe it was John Bon Jovi, who once said, "Who says you can't go home?"
That's right. Who says? Because then we're going to go home. We're going to go right back to our good friends at the Wrestling Observer Newsletter because it's where we should start. You know, you're bringing it back. It's where we should start. And this is going to be in regards to the women's tournament that's been announced. So according to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, the WWE Women's Tournament being named the Mae Young Classic has signaled a change in the company line. The company had long promoted Moolah as the all-time greatest because she dominated the title that she owned and was close with Vince's father. They have now moved on, looking at Young as the Babe Ruth of women's wrestling in their own history. It's also noted that Stephanie McMahon was close to Young.
I mean, this is the standard, they named it the Mae Young Classic. what can we make out of this? Well, why isn't it the Moolah Classic? And then we go on and on and on. This is the stuff that they do. This is they name it after someone because they want to. If you look at modern day professional wrestling in the past, you know, decade or whatever, Mae Young's more popular than the Fabulous Moolah. Like, she had the bigger personality. She was the one who, you know, was telling people she was going to kick their ass. Like, she was the one that – she was the Betty White of pro wrestling is really what she was.
Yeah.
And everyone loved Mae Young at the end. And most of the fan base that they're trying to appeal to has a closer connection to Mae Young than the Fabulous Moolah. I don't think this has anything to do with Vince's father. I don't think this has anything to do with they've now moved on and are looking at Young as the Babe Ruth of women's wrestling. It's apples and oranges. They could have gone with either. They could have named the thing after fucking Trish Stratus, you know, but she's alive. So it could have been almost anyone. Like, it could be the Alundra Blaze Classic. And she could drive in on her monster truck and we could all have a grand old time. It's just to me, and I don't have any proof because I'm not sitting there in the Meltzer household while we give star ratings to matches. And it may not even be Meltzer. It could be Alvarez. Could be somebody else. Who knows? But I just think this is an effort to make something out of nothing and an effort that no one's really going to question. I mean, they're just going to look at it and be like, okay, that's fine. And then, you know, go forward. Now, there is the rumors about what Mae Young or what Moolah did back in the day with women and pimping them out and the way they were treated. But it wouldn't shock me if there's some stories about things that Dusty did on the indies with talent and not paying them and making them run things and whatever. So don't come at me with that story either, because I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, I'm kind of like you. I think this is much ado about nothing. And I don't understand where there's this idea that suddenly, like, whatever you want to say about, you know, the Fabulous Moolah or otherwise, like, I don't really feel like there's anything to this. You brought up Dusty. Should Ric Flair be all incensed that there's a tournament named after Dusty Rhodes that may or may not happen this year? Ha 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 ha. But you know what I mean? Like, we don't have a Ric Flair Memorial tournament, you know, but we have a Dusty tournament. Does that mean that the WWE somehow valued Dusty more than Flair? Like, if you read Flair's biography, no. And certainly not Triple H. Triple H loved that dude. And Vince,
oh, yeah.
You know, and Vince, according to Rick, was nothing but good to him. So I'm with you. I think that this is much ado about nothing. I think this is an attempt to make a mountain out of a non-existent molehill. Mae Young was somebody that was very near and dear to the hearts of a ton of folks, like you said. She was the fun one out of the two. Like, when the two were both alive and together, like, Mae Young did the outrageous stuff that Moolah then had to rein in every once in a while. Like, that's really kind of what happened. And so, you know, it is what it is. And the other part of it is, you know, I can't help but think that, you know, you talked about lasting legacy. Mae Young outlived Moolah. And so
yep.
We had Mae Young around a little bit longer, and she did some stuff on her own towards the end that probably sticks in people's memories more, like the year she got inducted into the Hall of Fame, that she briefly worked a match and was like the oldest person to work or oldest woman to work a match ever, or something like that. Or, like, she wrestled in every decade of her life or something up to certain.
Yeah, point. Something crazy like that.
And so, yeah, I don't think it's about, you know, Moolah's, you know, them wanting to diminish Moolah's legacy at all, as it is, like you said, putting up a name that's a little more connected to fans and the wrestlers probably that are working this tournament.
And that's a great point that you're leading into right there, is that the talent in this tournament didn't even grow up on Moolah or Mae. They grew up on Lita and Trish Stratus.
Yep.
But they saw Moolah and they thought, well, and they never really got a chance to see, or they saw Mae Young. And
yep.
That's, you know, a part of that influence. So it's really a non-story. It's just people trying to make something out of nothing. And that's part of the business that we're in. So I understand where we are coming from. By the way, our reading of the news comes to you courtesy of our good friends at 411mania.com. They just report the news. They don't make it. They're in the business too. So it is what it is, as Patrick O'Dowd said.
And yes.
Obviously, big old stinky piece of bullshit.
No, that's okay, because you know what? We're just going to stick with the newsletter. You know, the new. You might as well. It was a busy little cycle for the Wrestling Observer newsletter. As according to the West Wrestling Observer newsletter, and this may be true, they have confirmed, Greg, confirmed. Report confirmed, but without naming their source or naming any sort of source, has confirmed the report from earlier this week in regards to the WWE planning a women's Money in the Bank match for next month's event. The report states that there will be two women's matches on the pay-per-view, a championship match, and the other women in a Money in the Bank ladder match. There was almost a women's Money in the Bank match last year, but the WWE opted not to move forward with the match. The Wrestling Observer newsletter says that there is a format sheet out this week that officially just says women's match number two. So while planned, it's not, and I'm quoting here, quote, set in stone. Definition of it might happen or it not reporting at its finest. Like you're confirming a report, but then at the very end of your confirmation, you say, but it might not happen.
So let me get this straight. You're telling me that the SmackDown brand Money in the Bank pay-per-view might have two women's matches? And that one of those women's matches might be Money in the Bank? It's so stupid. It really is.
So while playing, but it's not set in stone. Like, come on, man. Like, I really, like, if you're going to, this is what drives me nuts. And I know it's, you know, and I can already hear, like, if I cared about Twitter and the way people responded when we go after our friends of the Wrestling Observer, we're looking at you, Trevor. This is what drives me nuts about this, is that this report that you're saying is confirmed. So when you use a word like confirmed, that is, you are saying it is going to happen, that this is, you have got this backed, that this report of a planned match is going to happen. And then at the very end, because you're a coward and you don't want to stand by your confirmation and your source, you then say, but it might not happen. Because it's planned, but it might not happen. And the thing that, the beauty of that last sentence is, planned, but not, might not happen could be anything. It could be they decide not to do it before the show. They could say it was cut due to time. All kinds of things that you can use that sentence where they're like, well, we said it wasn't set in stone when it doesn't happen. It's ludicrous.
This is trademark Wrestling Observer and trademark bullshit internet wrestling news. I mean, they're basically hedging their bets and talking about how so they're right no matter what. And
yeah,
if
exactly.
It doesn't happen, then you're going to have Meltzer being like, well, there was talk, but I couldn't reveal it because I promised my source I wouldn't. And or if it happens, they'll be like, yep, we told you it was going to happen. Like, this is one of those situations where it's written as such to where you can't be wrong. And that's where the bullshit comes into play. Like, that's where you're just trying to sell an article. This is worse than the last one because it's at least the last one took a stance on one side. It's not like they said at the end, or there could be other reasons, you know, or maybe Mae Young's family or Moolah's family didn't want them to. You know, they didn't hedge their bets on the first one. They hedged their bets here on the second one. And then I love there was almost a Women's Money in the Bank match last year. That's a more concrete report of the potential for Women's Money in the Bank last year than anything we heard last year. Last year, all we had was speculation and people wanting a Women's Money in the Bank. It was never even reported that there might be one. Nevertheless, an official format or a format that officially says women's match number two, but while planned, it's not set in stone. Well, they recently had three women's matches on the same pay-per-view. So it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that this could happen. And I want there to be a Women's Money in the Bank match. It seems to set itself up for it. Next week on SmackDown, there's a five-way. Because, you know, if Raw's doing a five-way, SmackDown also has to do a five-way. That's the way the WWE works.
Weird booking.
Of course, that's what they do. That's always been that way with the brand split. You know, they mimic and mirror each other. And so someone's going to earn the opportunity to challenge for Naomi's championship. And then the other women are going to probably be in the Money in the Bank ladder match. So there's only four left, so they might have to add one or two, which is possible. You got Lana still debuting, although I can't imagine her to be in there. You could call somebody up. You could even have Asuka show up. Who knows? There's a lot that you could do there. But to me, it's like a well, duh. You know, no kidding. Like, yeah, there's probably going to be a women's Money in the Bank. The women have main evented. They've been in Hell in a Cell. They've done the Iron Man match. They did the Falls Count Anywhere. Like, this is the next step in the progression.
I got to tell you, when you said Welda so fast, and I was like, who is Welda? Who is this new women's wrestler named Welda?
Well, see, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, she was going to be Sister Abigail, but then they decided against it because Sarah Bridges, Crazy Mary Dobson, might play Sister Abigail, although she just debuted on NXT under a whole new name once again, so we really don't know because plans may change.
Plans may change. And you know plans, what? I'm going to change I'm gonna change plans and go to one last little bit of news. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea.
I think we're going to stay with the Wrestling Observer, though.
Three for three.
Because why stop working with a good thing?
I mean, seriously, why shop at two stores when you can get everything you need at one?
Just getting back in the saddle, dude. Just getting back in the saddle. You know, we'll be a little more settled. We'll start sifting. We'll start picking on some other people. All you Wrestling Observer, you know, worshipers, you can go back to feeling relatively safe that we will only cover two out of the three bullshit reports a week from your source. Okay. It'll be okay. But this week it's three for three. And according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter, the WWE still has not offered any contracts to ex ROH wrestlers following legal threats by ROH over claims of contract tampering. Adam Cole finished up with ROH and is taking indie dates, but isn't taking a full schedule like Kyle O'Reilly, Donovan Dijak, Bobby Fish, and others are. The feeling is that unless something changes, Cole will be in the WWE and probably pushed as a major star on the NXT brand. Impact Wrestling is also making a play for him as they are looking to sign fresh and hot talent. Cole has not signed with anyone.
What's really funny to me is that outside of the headline, it never calls him Adam Cole. It just keeps calling him Cole over and over again, as if to transition into his WWE name. Of course, the internet would love to say Cole Adams, which is probably not going to happen, but it could work. What's really funny about this is that they're saying that he's finished up with ROH and is taking indie dates, but isn't taking a full schedule like Kyle O'Reilly, who's worked for Evolve, Donovan Dijak, who's worked for Evolve, Bobby Fish, who's worked for Evolve. Evolve, by the way, linked to the WWE. So if you want to use something as proof that he's going to WWE, he should be working for Evolve, but he's not. And the whole TNA thing, I mean, to say Impact Wrestling is also making a play for him, like, why wouldn't they? I mean, that's easy to prove,
right?
Easy to assume, and never has to be proven. They'd be stupid not to. Other than his size, he's got every single thing to offer any professional wrestling company out there. He's an amazing performer. We've been lucky enough to have him on the show twice. It just makes sense for him to go there. Here's the thing. We know that, first of all, they say they have not offered any contracts to ex-ROH wrestlers. We don't know. We know about the legal threats by Ring of Honor over claims of contract tampering because they kind of let that be known themselves. And basically it was tampering. It was the WWE talking to people before they were done with their contracts and then going. It happened with the Hardys. I mean, it had to happen with the Hardys. They were literally wrestled Ring of Honor one day and WWE the next. And they had signed some form of deal with Ring of Honor. We don't know what that deal is. But we know they had to drop titles and then go into the WWE, and it happened in basically a 24-hour period. From what we've heard, they're basically waiting a good 90 days before they even talk to anybody who is finished up with Ring of Honor. Even though Ring of Honor doesn't have a 90-day no contract or no contact or a 90-day non-compete clause in their contracts, at least that we know of, because, again, Ring of Honor, most things don't get reported about Ring of Honor, which is what makes it kind of fun when Bully Ray shows up in Ring of Honor, or the Hardy show up in Ring of Honor, and no one knew it was going to happen. Or Kenny Omega shows up on the screen, you know, at the last pay-per-view, and no one knew that he was going to be there in order to fire Adam Cole to get where we're going to be. Cole then taped kind of his departure from the company at Ring of Honor's TV tapings it all makes sense because he was already working there without a contract. So why would he suddenly stop working without a contract unless he was going to WWE? Matt Sydal showed up in Impact Wrestling, still wrestled for Ring of Honor because they're both kind of on a per date thing with him. So it just makes 100% sense to me that he's going to the WWE. And if you were Adam Cole and you've never been hotter than you are right now, where would you go?
I think that's a silly question. It'd be the WWE, Greg.
It'd be the WWE. Exactly. He's not, he's taking indie dates. I don't even think any have been announced for the month of June. I think they've only been announced for the month of May. He's wrestling in a couple tournaments this weekend and making those appearances. And I don't know of anything he has going on in June. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just missed something. It's highly possible that he has something going on. He could show up at the NXT tapings for all we know. I mean, it just makes sense that he might be able to be around. But that's just – but to report on this, again, it's another Welda. It's another Welda. Like, of course, he hasn't signed anywhere yet because, A, we haven't seen him because he's not going to have to go to the Performance Center and hone his skills. He's the kind of guy that – he's a three-time Ring of Honor world champion. Or maybe – I don't know how many he is. He could show up at NXT and wrestle just like, Drew McIntyre did, just like, Aleister Black, just like plenty of them. So,
to say that this has to be
done is crazy.
And the list goes on and on. Like, he is the type of guy that when he debuts, he's going to debut like an Austin Aries, like a Bobby Roode, like any of those guys. Like, he's just like them.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's but this to me is the reason why this is bullshit is because, again, this doesn't seem to be any kind of a sourced report. What's really funny is that the report seems to be talking about no one from Ring of Honor going to WWE, but yet also kind of talking about Adam Cole. Like, it doesn't really know what it wants to talk about.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, yeah, dropping all those other names in the middle of the report and the article to kind of create a comparison and talking about vaguely, or nebulously about ROH talent. It does nothing. That says nothing. That reveals nothing. It's a very weird, it's a strange report, and like you said, it says nothing that we don't already know, that any fan with half a brain who's been following what's going on in Ring of Honor and with Adam Cole would be able to figure out. Like, any mutt could have generated that report.
Yeah, I mean, people thought he was done when he dropped the title to Daniels. That was in February.
Exactly.
And we're in May now. And so, that's obviously a moot point as well. So Adam Cole still not signed anywhere as far as we know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But it's a clean sweep for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And I don't think we've ever done that before.
No, we usually, we're usually pretty good. Usually we try to spice it up a little bit. Coming back, and this is only the second show back, and this is the first time we've brought back the bullshit internet wrestling report since the hiatus. So we went with what we know. We went with our top bullshit artists. We've sifted through some bullshit, and I'm not even going to pick a winner this week, Greg. If you want to pick a winner, you're welcome to it. But I mean, just thank you, White Wrestling Observer, for slinging this shit every week.
Yeah, I think the Wrestling Observer Newsletter is the big winner this week based upon the bullshit that they're putting out there. And here's the thing. We pick the bullshit internet wrestling reports based on the news reports themselves, not based upon the source. And it just so happens that all three of these came from the same source. So it's because we don't go directly to those sites. We get them from 411, and it's wherever the source is. And the source for everything, source of all the bullshit this week, Wrestling Observer.
I got to jump in, though. Because, whenever this show airs, but currently on Twitter, I shit you not, 2 minutes ago, Dave Meltzer responding to the following question. No contracts offered to XROH guys yet. Safe to say the WWE's talked to them? Possibly why no one has signed elsewhere yet? To which the response was, it's just a weird situation. Thanks, Dave.
just a weird situation. We know it's a 90-day thing that the WWE themselves has put into place to keep themselves out of trouble with Ring of Honor. That's all it is. They could sign all these guys now if they wanted to. No, O'Reilly's been gone. You know, it's been more than 90 days for O'Reilly. Maybe he's not going there. Maybe he didn't pass the medicals. Who knows? Bobby Fish is 40 years old. Maybe they don't want somebody who's 40 years old. They already got Bobby Roode. He's 40 years old. So he's 40 years old, and he's the NXT champion. Let's think about that for a second. How come no one's complaining about that, that your NXT champion is 40 years old? I mean, I'm not – I love Bobby Roode. I love everything that he's doing. I want him to be around.
I mean, yeah, that's a whole other topic for a different time, because I actually think I have the answer to that question.
Okay. Well, we will save that topic for another time.
Yeah. No, we're slinging bullshit, and you've already thrown out about a dozen topics that we're going to cover anyway, and we got lots of shows, I'm assuming, until the next hiatus.
We hope so. Well, let's do this.
You're welcome.
So why is it? Tell me the answer to the Bobby Roode question. The 40-year-old champion of NXT.
I think it's the reason that he's in NXT and he's an NXT champion is because who the fuck knew who Bobby Roode was before he came to NXT. Like,
basically, the people that watch NXT.
Yeah, because they watched Impact. Like, that's it.
Right.
Like, and I'm with you, dude. I love Bobby Roode. I love his look. I love his gimmick. I love the way he's worked. I've followed him since his days in TNA as a member of, and I always forget the name of the Canadian faction that was around there, but he was part of
Team Canada.
Team Canada. Yeah, it wasn't even a good name. That's how easy it was to forget. Like I have watched it. I remember reading, you know, talking to you about how, you know, when you looked at the Team Canada guys, and it was like that Roode guys looks like he could be something special. And sure enough, like out of Team Canada rose Bobby Roode.
I don't know though. According to Hulk Hogan, Bobby's not the guy, brother.
Well, he's not, but, you know.
Well, that was okay. Also a storyline reason for Bobby not winning the title and then winning it 2 weeks later. So.
Yeah, it's everybody's not the guy, brother.
And that's the thing. Like, Bobby Roode was the longest reigning TNA World Heavyweight Champion.
Yep, he was.
And did so when they were sort of at the top of their ratings. So if anyone from TNA is going to be well known, a hell of a lot more people saw Bobby Roode holding the TNA World Heavyweight Championship than saw Drew McIntyre holding it as Drew Galloway. Or then saw Eric Young holding it as well.
Sure.
So there's a lot of reason to think that Bobby Roode. Plus, he's got a cool theme song.
He does. I've told you about my metric for when these guys debut and whether or not, you know, why they are where they are. I go to the folks I know who watch wrestling as the quote unquote casual fan, and when I ask them, what do you think about this person? And they're like, who? That's all you need to know. Like, and that's it. Like, I've had to explain to people why AJ Styles was a big deal. You know, I've had to explain to people why, you know, Nakamura was, you know, is who he is. And all that. And it all comes from the same place. For most of the wrestling viewing population, their knowledge of wrestlers and where they work is limited to one company. I'm not saying that's a good thing.
Right.
It's one company.
Yeah, it goes back to when Rob Van Dam made a surprise return to the WWE after his TNA run, and people literally were like, where have you been?
Yep, exactly.
You know, it's like when Sting served in the WWE and people thought he was missing for 14 years. You know, Kurt Angle spent more time in TNA than he did in the WWE. And yet he's going to be long remembered for his run in the WWE. And they're smart with certain things they do. Where does Nakamura make his in-ring debut? WrestleMania weekend, where that whole crowd knows who the fuck he is.
Oh, yeah,
where does AJ Styles make his Royal Rumble debut? Orlando, Florida, where he wrestled the majority of his TNA matches. So it's, you know, they know what they're doing. That's also when Sasha Banks came out and started the program with Charlotte. Orlando, Florida, a city who'd react for her theme song that started up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they know what they're doing when they do these things. Bobby Roode, you know, he's 40 years old, but he is the NXT champion. And damn it, the man.
Glorious.
And, you know, he is still.
Victorious.
Bobby. And that's the thing about Bobby Roode. Like, he's still fantastic.
Yeah, he's one of the few people who can come out to a theme song like that and you just accept it.
Oh, he got the damn thing over. I mean, that's,
yeah.
You know, that theme
like,
song got
like,
over thanks to Bobby Roode. I mean, that, you know, and he credits, that's the funny thing. He's not stupid. Like, he actually will credit the theme song for a good portion of his success. And that's a guy who just gets it. And that's the big thing for me.
Man.
He just gets it. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens.
You just made the list!
We are back with Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd, and the soundbite you just heard, of course, would obviously direct your attention to one Chris Jericho. And there was an interview that came out. It's actually a few days old with Chris Jericho revealing some things. And you've probably already read about him winning the Universal title at WrestleMania and doing some other things. But it went into how the whole program with Kevin Owens began. And basically, they were in London after WrestleMania 32. And he teamed up with Jericho. And it was just a random pairing, house show, whatever. And it was TV. So they did something, and I guess they won. They won the match. I don't even remember. And Jericho's down the aisleway, and he even says, all of a sudden, you know, here comes Kevin Owens running and running at him, and you know, he's going to jump into his arms. And it's funny because he even says, like, holy shit, this is a big dude. I better catch this guy. And he jumped, and he got him, and he said that Owens was like, we're the greatest, you're the greatest. And then Jericho's like, you're the donkey. And Owens is like, yep, you're the goat, and I'm the donkey. And they found it so funny that Jericho was like, there's something with this guy. And next thing you know, they put them together, and of course was born Jericho and the feud for WrestleMania and everything else. What's interesting about this is that first he talks about the first official match, SummerSlam, with Enzo and Cass. And that's how it started, built from there. But then he talks about the chemistry that you have with someone and the chemistry. And he said it reminded him of working with The Rock, Shawn Michaels, or Edge. And that's what I want to talk about, Patrick O'Dowd, because it seems to me you don't have to stretch things too far to say that Chris Jericho just compared Kevin Owens to The Rock, Shawn Michaels, and Edge. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't even know that you could say that you have to put the qualifier of you could say. He did it. He said that working with him reminded him of working with the individuals you just talked about, The Rock, Shawn Michaels, or Edge. In some, you know, if you want to talk about names among names in the last 20 years, like – you know, he might as well have thrown Austin in there too. And I don't know how much work he really did with Stone Cold. You know, Chris Jericho opened his WWE career interrupting The Rock and riffing with The Rock. And when you think about people who wear the nostalgia glasses in terms of an era that they look for, that unscripted promo or that semi-scripted promo from, you know, the Attitude Era into the early 2000s and forward was really something that people felt was very natural and organic and amazing. And so if he you know, and there were certain talkers who could just do it, and what Jericho told me there in that interview is that he feels that at least as a talker, he is on par with three great talkers. And that's not even talking about the work in the ring, you know, and his capabilities in the ring. I think that's high praise. And I think Kevin Owens backs it up. Like, I really do. Like, you look at the way that he is. I think I said this on our last, it was either on our last show or maybe just the last segment we recorded. The WWE wants Kevin Owens to carry a belt. Always.
Yeah, we talked about it on this week's episode.
Yeah.
He's always got to carry a belt.
And there's a reason for that. Because of how good he is, like just talking and being that asshole champion that you don't like is the champ, but he rubs it in your face that he is the champ and that you've got to deal with it. even though you don't want him to be the champion. And he makes you loathe him. You know, again, I talk to, you know, people who I know who watch wrestling talk about how much they dislike Kevin Owens. And I was like, he's doing his job. If you dislike him that way, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. And every single person I say that to, they're like, I know. And it's like, exactly. You're part of the game and you recognize that he's good at it. Really, really, really good at it.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the biggest way that you could tell that the WWE is solidly behind Kevin Owens. He's a fat guy who wrestles in his shirt.
Yep.
And he's not the prototypical. And they didn't throw him in the Wyatt family. They didn't do anything with him that would, you know.
They didn't make him a garbage man.
Right.
Like, they didn't make him a stupid gimmick. Yeah, they could have absolutely given him a dumb gimmick. And they didn't.
No, all they did was put him over John Cena in his first ever WWE match. And
but
he made it on his first night in the company with NXT. He turns on Sami Zayn right after Sami Zayn wins the NXT championship. He immediately upstaged a guy who's been chasing this title forever. And he gets they have been solidly behind. It's just like the whole Jinder Mahal thing. This isn't out of the blue. People, this doesn't come out of nowhere. This is something that the WWE is behind. You know, it's rare that they go crazy and just do something out of nowhere. And sometimes it's begotten by injury, sometimes it's whatever. But these things happen for a reason.
And the great thing is, like, you know, if you look at his trajectory and you know, Kevin Owens has done an interview or two, you know, out of character where he's talked about, you know, the direction his career took. And if you care about Enzo Amore even a little, it's because he gave you where, you know, he helped direct Kevin Owens a little bit. And Kevin Owens credits him with this. Like in an interview, he talks about what he was, you know, he was in NXT trying to find his way. And Enzo just said, do what got you here. Don't try to be something you're not. And Owens embraced that and really ran with it. And, you know, he was told that he was going to get his shot. He was told that when he got a shot, he needed to make it count. And he convinced them that he was an investment that was worth following. Just like, you know, we talked about with Jinder earlier in the show. There was a lot of mockery about that brass ring comment that got made a while back. But I'm gonna go back to this. I think I've said this before too. There's truth to it, because the guys who go out there and get it, a lot of times, or go after it and really put it in there, those are the guys you see that really pull themselves and make themselves indispensable to the company, you know. And I would even argue some of the guys who have left made themselves indispensable to the company. And, you know, and Cody Rhodes is probably one of the best examples. Cody didn't have to leave. He asked to leave. But no matter what he did when he was in the WWE, he did it all out. He went after it hard. And that's what I think you're seeing out of Jinder. And I definitely think that's what you've seen out of Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens came in, made himself a big deal, showed what he could do in NXT. They gave him a big ball to run with when they brought him up to the roster, and he hasn't let it go.
Yeah, and why would he? I mean, it's a smart move on his part. He's also talked about a conversation he had with Stone Cold Steve Austin that I love.
Yep.
And it was years ago, back when he was kind of in shape, Kevin Steen. And basically, there was one piece of, you know, of advice that Austin gave him, and it was never stop talking. He basically told him, he was like, you're a talker. Never stop talking. What does Kevin Owens do better than anything else?
Talks.
And he backs it up. And it's like he walks through, not even through the curtain anymore, but he comes out on that stage, and there's just an immediate sense of electricity that you see with AJ, that you see with Jericho, that you see with Nakamura, whether we get it or not. And so it's
– Yeah,
it's
just because you don't get it. Don't project.
You're right. Just because I don't get it. And it's fine. But like I said, I'm okay with it. Like I said on our last episode. So Kevin Owens is in a position to be one of those legendary figures in the WWE, in my opinion. And I think, you know, will he go down with those names in history? Who knows? When Rocky Maivia made his debut, we didn't know he was going to go down with those names in history. We didn't know John Cena was going to become John Cena. It's kind of funny. The only one we really knew was going to happen kind of seems to be Roman Reigns, as much as people hate that. We damn sure didn't see Jinder coming, and who knows where he'll get to. So, but Kevin Owens, he's proven over the past 2 years that he's here to stay, and he's going to be a major force and go down in history. He's going to leave his mark in WWE history in some way. It's just a matter of how far up the top 20 or top 10 list he makes it. You know, Edge, you could argue, is in the top 10 with Triple H and The Undertaker and staying in Savage and whoever. Maybe that pushes it down to the top 15. Where's Owens going to rest? Does he surpass a CM Punk? Does he surpass an Edge? Who knows? But he's well on his way. And that's the biggest thing that people need to understand. This guy is going places and doing things.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of DeMarco Wrestling. For Patrick O'Dowd, I am Greg DeMarco, and we will see you next time.
What makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story.
Shut your dumb mouth.